Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Slater, Judge Smith, the Honorable Matthew B. Johnson presiding.
Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For the sake of the audio record, I will say that today's date is January 29, 2020. This panel of the court has five cases on its calendar today, three of which will be submitted with oral argument and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A19-1429, State versus Nathan Hunter. Counsel for appellant, Mr. Zettler, you may approach and begin.
May it please the court. My name is Todd Zettler. I represent appellant, the state of Minnesota. This is a state's pretrial appeal of a district court order suppressing drugs and dismissing counts. As a pretrial appeal by the state must show two things: critical impact and that the district court was erroneous as a matter of law. In this case, respondent has conceded that dismissing the counts is critical impact, so that is not an issue on appeal, really. The question, though, is whether the district court erred. The facts are based largely on the PC packet that was submitted at the contested omnibus hearing. Mr. Hunter was reported as suicidal to Isanti County deputies. They pinged his cell phone to Belle Plaine. Belle Plaine dispatch notified Belle Plaine police of a suicidal male who might possess weapons. They found him driving, and Officer Weckman stopped him. Officer Weckman found a knife in Hunter's pocket, took that, and smelled the slight odor of marijuana from inside the vehicle. Weckman described the vehicle as posing a hazard on the highway, so he ordered Johns Mobile to tow it. Weckman searched the vehicle because of the odor of marijuana and because it had to be towed. Weckman found marijuana in the center console during that search and found a large amount of marijuana in a locked black case in the trunk. Hunter filed two motions to suppress and specified exactly the issues that he wanted to raise, and the district court then rejected most, accepted one, the suppression based upon Miranda of part of the statement. The district court, though, then found that the inventory search exception did not apply or was not met, and the probable cause automobile exception was not satisfied because the inventory search exception was articulated. So the state has appealed, which brings us to today. So the district court is wrong on both that the inventory search exception was not satisfied and that second, that if because they articulated their inventory search exception, the probable cause automobile search exception cannot apply.
Mr. Zettler, on the issue of the inventory search, is it not true that the record does not demonstrate any evidence of the, and it's the Belle Plaine, is my understanding, of the authority of their process or procedure for inventory searches, and that's a necessary requirement for an inventory search. So wouldn't it be true that at least as of the record that was before the court, which I understand was based on the reports only, did not, and maybe the point you were making, if we weren't aware, perhaps there would be an issue, but in any event, there's no evidence in the record of a policy for inventory search.
That's correct.
That not fatal then to the, so the court would be correct in terms of the inventory search?
The court would be correct had that issue been challenged by Hunter. It wasn't. That wasn't one of the issues that he raised. He articulated specifically what he wanted. He did raise those issues.
So would you agree then with, and I thought I saw it in respondent's brief, that they believe a remand is appropriate. That would be among the many issues for remand would be to allow then the city of Belle Plaine to present evidence of an inventory search. In other words, I assume you agree the state would have to prove an exception to the search warrant. We didn't know about it, hence we don't have evidence of an inventory search basis. Therefore, that cannot be the basis for the search. That's kind of where it's at right now, I assume.
I would agree had that issue been raised. So at the contested omnibus hearing, the state only has to address issues raised by the defense because there are not innumerable, but there are many issues that can be raised, and those are listed in appellant's brief, at a contested omnibus hearing. So the state doesn't have to come to a contested omnibus hearing and disprove or prove everything that is unrelated to anything that the defendant is raising. And the defendant never raised either of those bases for a search. The defense raised something else entirely.
That's why I asked, that I assume on that issue you would agree a remand's appropriate. In other words, whether raised or not, the state has to show an exception, and you can't show the exception of inventory without that evidence, but you didn't know about it, so you didn't present the evidence. So the point being is that would have to be off the table either way, I presume, right now, subject to a remand as a basis for the search.
I don't agree for this reason. Because it had not been articulated as an issue, the state relied upon the police reports, which indicated that the vehicle was a hazard, had to be towed, was searched pursuant to the inventory search exception. So that's in the police reports, and that should be sufficient to establish the inventory search. Now, had the defendant said, I'm challenging the inventory search, then the state would have to come forward with the inventory search policy and that they searched pursuant to that policy. But because that was not identified as an issue by a defendant, that wasn't done.
If the automobile exception applies, does it matter whether the inventory search exception also applies?
No, it does not.
And it seems to me that Respondent's Counsel has conceded that the automobile exception applies.
Yes.
I'll let Mr. Nygold, of course, say that in his own words, but that's my take on his brief.
And mine as well, Judge. So, yes, regardless of how court comes out on the inventory search exception, it either is an independent basis for a search of this vehicle. So the inventory search or the automobile search exception.
When you refer to the issues raised by defendant, what are you looking at? I don't see it in the transcript of the very short omnibus hearing.
So if you look in the reply brief the state's reply brief, the defense raised specifically two issues in its first motion to suppress and then expanded that to five issues in the second motion to suppress.
And those are stated in the motion pleading?
Correct.
Okay.
So page one of the reply brief, the defense articulated that.
I see it spelled out there.
Yep.
But those are taken from the motion document, not from.
Correct. And then we don't have to guess what the defense issues were because they filed then, after the contested omnibus hearing, a brief specifically articulating and arguing their issues. So there's no question as to what their issues were, and they weren't the inventory search. But again, Judge Johnson, you are exactly correct. The automobile search is a separate, independent basis to search, and respondent has essentially conceded that it applies, and the district court was wrong on the law. The district court found that because they articulated the inventory search exception, no other exception could apply, and certainly not the automobile exception. Respondent concedes on appeal that that's wrong as a matter of law, and respondent concedes that the district court was also wrong as a matter of law, that the odor of marijuana alone is a sufficient basis to search a vehicle. That is probable cause in Minnesota. The district court held that it wasn't, that you had to have an odor and something else, some visual evidence. That's not the law. Respondent has conceded that on appeal.
Does that, just a matter of curiosity, does that analysis change in view of the fact that medical marijuana is legal and you might have a non-criminal amount of marijuana in a vehicle?
It hasn't changed yet. And I don't know what they will do if they ultimately legalize. It could go the way of gun permits and carrying a gun or pills with prescriptions. But currently, it's full probable cause to search.
Do pills have an odor?
They don't.
And right now, that's the only thing legal for medicine, right?
Correct.
So it seems, if I may, I'm sorry. It seems like the issue, after reading the responsive brief, it seems like the issue is whether or not to remand. I think it seems like the parties agree that there was error. The question is whether to remand or not. And Mr. Nygold cited the Licari case and the Weeks case. You did not address them in your reply brief. I'm wondering if you have any oral argument in response to that case law.
Respondent has cited no case indicating that it's appropriate to remand for a credibility determination on the probable cause. Not one. And that's because there isn't. Because if you look at State versus Florence, for instance, it articulates what needs to happen at a contested omnibus hearing. Number one, they have to be specific in their issues. And number two, the state can generally proceed on the record, which includes reliable hearsay. That only changes if the defense puts forward some evidence calling that into question, making it inherently incredible. So not just unlikely, not just, you know, it's a question one way or the other. No, inherently unreliable. There was nothing here, nothing in this case. So a remand is appropriate, but a remand for trial with a full reversal of the district court. So regardless of what happened on the inventory search exception, the probable cause automobile search exception was certainly satisfied in this case, and therefore the drugs would have inevitably been discovered. On that, there's agreement between the parties. Respondent simply wants a remand so the district court can determine whether Officer Weckman was lying when he said he smelled the odor of marijuana. But that's not an appropriate remand on the facts of this case. So at this point, the district court was wrong to decide that the inventory search exception was not met because that was never challenged by Hunter. The district court was wrong to decide that the inventory search exception barred application of the probable cause automobile search exception. And the district court was wrong to decide that the odor of marijuana alone is not sufficient to support probable cause to search the car. If there's no further questions, I'll wait for...
It appears not. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal, of course. Mr. Nyvold.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. Mark Nyvold representing Mr. Hunter. Let me start with the issue here, or the problem created by the way the state proceeded. You know, they have this hearing, and there's really nothing specific put on the record. They just go off the record, come back, and say, well, defense, you submit your memo first, we'll submit ours later. Well, that's backwards to begin with. The state has the obligation to assert warrant exceptions. Mr. Zettler says it's up to the defense.
To assert or to prove and establish?
Well, the state has to assert and prove warrant exceptions. The state didn't have a search warrant in this case. How is it going to justify the stop and the search without a warrant exception? The state knows that. The state has the burden to go forward. Yes, the defense has to say, well, we're challenging the search. Our rights were violated. And he did that. He filed a motion that said, we moved to suppress for violation of our constitutional rights, all evidence seized. Okay, then it's up to the state to say, judge, we can justify this under the automobile exception and the inventory exception. And for the inventory, here's our policy, the policy. They didn't do that.
So when should the state have done that?
They should have done it at the hearing where they discussed how they were going to proceed, which is the contested omnibus on June 6. All they had to say is, judge, we're asserting the automobile exception and the inventory exception. Now, I agree the court was wrong to say that you can't do both. Obviously, that's wrong. They get to do both. But they have to assert them. That's case law, State v. Turi. It's right in the judge's order, recognizing that the state has the obligation to assert and establish warrant exceptions. The defense doesn't have to go into the omnibus hearing and say, well, here are all the warrant exceptions, and we're asserting all of them. I mean, that would be ridiculous. Why would they do that? How could they do that? They would be asking the prosecutor to brief every warrant exception. They don't have to say that. The state has to say what exceptions it's relying on. There's no question about that. And here they didn't. And they set up a schedule where the defense submits its brief first. And they haven't heard one word from the prosecutor at that point as to what warrant exceptions. There were none asserted. So they didn't do what they needed to do. And although the judge addressed the automobile exception, and it is available even if you're raising others. I agree with that. But they didn't assert the inventory exception, and they didn't support it. That, on a remand, if the court does that, does not go back. They don't get a second bite at the apple on that.
How do you respond to Mr. Zettler's point, though, that it was not clearly identified as an issue for them to prepare? In other words, at the search of the vehicle itself, the Miranda issue appeared to be the last one that the court favored, and of course, any statements, but was, were they on notice that the warrantless search would be an issue? It was an issue raised by the defendant, such that they'd be prepared.
Was the state on notice?
Yes.
Yes. The defense had filed a motion to suppress all the evidence for violation of constitutional rights. Okay? So the state has to justify that warrantless search. It's on the state to say, here's how we're going to do it.
That satisfy the Needham requirement that it's specific enough, because obviously the Miranda is a constitutional right as well, and would they have known that this specific issue we're talking about, that the warrantless search of the vehicle would be addressed?
The defense satisfied Needham by specifying that they were challenging the stop and the search and asking to suppress all evidence based on that. That's what Needham requires. Needham does not say the defense has to assert warrant exceptions or say, here are warrant exceptions and we oppose them all. Why would you do that? I mean, that's just not the procedure. That's not the practice.
Needham talks about how it's natural after the defendant identifies the issues that then the state will call the officer as a witness, and there's a direct examination, cross-examination by defense counsel, and so on. It seems to me, I mean, the issue here is the fact that neither party requested an opportunity to examine any witnesses. I mean, defense counsel could have insisted upon live testimony. And in fact, given the fourth issue in the second motion, which from the gray brief is summarized as police conducted an illegal search of Hunter's vehicle and possessions.
Yes.
I mean, it just seems natural that if defense counsel is interested in making a record about that, that defense counsel would call the officer.
All right. I don't think there's much doubt that defense counsel did what he needed to do to say we're challenging the search. At that point, it becomes the state's responsibility to say how they're going to justify it. There's no question about that. They have the burden to give notice and establish the warrant exceptions. I mean, it would be ridiculous if the prosecutor could walk in to an omnibus hearing and just sit there and wait for the defense to list off all the warrant exceptions that the prosecutor should assert. Why would a defense counsel ever do that? And why would, and the state would say, well, wait a minute, why are you asserting all these exceptions and making me prove them? I here are the ones that I'm going to rely on. If the court says that everything went here according to Hoyle, it's going to change motion practice, and prosecutors are just going to do nothing. And then they're going to wait and hope that the defense counsel doesn't assert warrant exceptions, or he does it in a fashion where the judge says, wait a minute, I'm not going to sit here and listen to, make them present evidence on 15 warrant exceptions. Well, why not have the prosecutor, who knows how he's going to try to justify this warrantless search? And that's the point. He doesn't have a warrant. He knows he's got to rely on warrant exceptions. So he's sitting back, taking advantage of the defense counsel's lapse. Well, it's not even a lapse. He's just hoping that the defense counsel isn't going to say what warrant exceptions he should assert and then support. Why? That's not his job to tell the prosecutor how to justify the search that the prosecutor is constitutionally required to justify.
Well, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Neibel, the fact, though, that the report does indicate that the officer smelled an odor of marijuana, would that not be, and both parties agreed that this report's going to be part of the evidence the court will consider on this constitutional issue, would that not be a basis then at that stage for the defense attorneys, well, I want to call the officer, ask the officer to cross-examine on the very point you're now asking for a remand as to the credibility of that statement, because knowing that that's an obvious exception, the state wouldn't even have to say it. That's one that the attorney's going to know is going to be a basis for the search.
That there would have been nothing wrong with that, and I wish he had done that, but for whatever reasons, either he thought, I'm going to let the prosecutor just go with what he hasn't said anything here. Maybe the prosecutor is not going to assert any warrant exceptions. You're really putting the defense counsel in the position of trying to do the prosecutor's job for him and to basically also almost tell the prosecutor, here's how you get to support this search. You got to bring a cop in to say that I smelled marijuana because I don't, so I get to challenge him because he never said it at the scene. And it looks really fishy that he's putting in his report the next day. And so is that what the defense counsel has to do? I don't think so, Your Honor.
What does this court do, though, now with a finding that the court obviously took from that report that, in fact, you smelled an odor of alcohol, or excuse me, an odor of marijuana? And that's in the court's order, and that's a finding from that report, which the defense attorney knew would be submitted.
Well, the defense attorney didn't know what warrant exceptions the state was relying on. In fact, the state didn't assert any warrant exceptions. So it's the court doing this on its own, and then the defense counsel finds out later, well, here's what the judge did.
I understand your point, I think, but in the more typical situation where, you know, there's issues identified, the parties present their testimony, the record's closed, it's common for district courts then to ask for briefing after the hearing, correct?
Yes.
And quite often, you know, the briefs are much more specific about the legal issues that are in play than was the oral identification of the issues at the beginning. And quite often, in reading omnibus hearing transcripts, I don't often see the defense or the prosecutor saying, having heard the issues identified, I want to now tell the court these are the issues raised by the state. I don't know. Prosecutors don't tend to do that, and nobody tends to require them or force them to do that at that point. They wait until they're brief, and then they brief it. I think that the issues that are raised, the legal issues that are raised in the briefing, are often they're no surprise, because given the testimony that was elicited by the witnesses, both lawyers probably have in mind similar issues that need to be briefed. So anyway, I don't know if this is all that much different in the fact that the state was not required to identify its legal issues prior to the filing of its brief. It's simply the fact that the factual record that was created at the hearing was very sparse, because it was only a 14-page packet of paper and no live testimony. It's a long question, I apologize. But I guess my question maybe is, you know, isn't this case rather similar to the typical case in the sense of when the state either is asked to identify its issues or when it actually does?
Well, there's not much doubt that the state has the burden to assert these. Now, when are they going to assert them? After the defense files its memo? And then after and the defense hasn't addressed them, and then the prosecutor gets to bring them up and then gets to do it without a hearing? I mean, Judge Smith, you probably heard thousands of omnibus hearings, and I don't think it would make much sense to let things proceed the way they did. That the state needs to be told, look, you have the burden. If you want to rely on these exceptions, put them up out front, okay? You've got a motion to suppress. You know the defense. It's not like the defense didn't say we're not challenging anything. They did challenge the search. So tell the prosecutor, here's what I'm relying on. Okay, well, if you're relying on the automobile exception, I think this is fishy that the officer never sat at the scene in an hour talking to another officer that he smelled marijuana. I want to cross-examine him on that. So have the prosecutor assert that. The prosecutor doesn't have any incentive to, if you tell him he doesn't have to do it, he's not going to. He's not going to say, I think I got to rely on the automobile exception. And then that prompts the defense to say, okay, we oppose that, we want a hearing. If you're just going to allow the parties to come in and have this vague discussion and in which the court, the prosecutor and the judge allow the defense to submit its memo first, these issues are not going to be addressed. And there's a process problem here. That's what the court, I think, should be concerned about, is what is the process for resolving issues where it's clear the defense is challenging the search? And case law makes clear they have the burden. Have them tell the state, the defense, what they're doing.
My question is this. Why did the defense not raise this at the district court level that the procedure was wrong?
Yeah, he should have. I don't know.
The problem is that both parties submitted the reports and relied on that as the evidence in the case, and then submitted to the judge to make the decision on whether it should be suppressed or not.
Yeah. Well,
so isn't there some responsibility on the defense to say, hold on, I want to cross-examine the witnesses?
Well, I just said defense should have. Let me amend that. It would have, in hindsight, it would have been nice. But on the other hand, I'm not saying the defense has the obligation to do what the state should do. you know, defense counsel might have thought, well, you know, I'll just wait, you know, he hasn't asserted the warrant exception, any warrant exceptions, so I'm not going to address him. I'm not going to tell him how he should justify his case. That's a perfectly, I think, permissible defense strategy.
Wasn't it fairly obvious that the odor of marijuana was going to be a key fact? I mean, almost regardless of which legal theory comes up. And I mean, the exceptions to the warrant requirement are finite in number, and I think both lawyers probably knew which issues were going to ultimately be raised. And defense counsel in the second motion was challenging the illegal search of Hunter's vehicle. Yeah. Defense counsel saw the police report, saw what it said, knew that was going to be in evidence, and so the defense counsel had an opportunity to introduce additional evidence into the record to contradict that sentence, that one line in the police report, but didn't do so.
In the brief here.
Could I, Judge Smith, make sure he has a chance to answer that question?
Oh, sure, and then sure, go ahead. Yes,
yeah,
please do.
Yeah.
Okay, could you?
I'm sorry.
Isn't it true? Isn't it true,
really,
Mr. Nyvold?
Give me a snippet of that question again.
Yeah, right. Isn't it true, Mr. Nyvold, that defense counsel knew that that the search of the vehicle was an issue? He put it in issue. He knew the police report said that the officer smelled marijuana. He knew that was in evidence, and that was the state of the record. That was the only evidence on that issue, and he or she chose not to supplement the record with anything else.
Well, two-part response. To make sure this didn't go off the rails, defense counsel could have said, I don't think it was required to, wait a minute, we want a hearing here. I think the state's going to have to use the automobile exception, and I'm just going to put it on the record. I want a hearing now, because, yes, that could have been done. But my point is it didn't have to be done. It wasn't his job to do that. He's not required beyond expressing that he's challenging the search on constitutional grounds, because case law makes clear the state has the burden to assert this and prove it.
But you're asking us now to remand to require the district court to have a hearing to let the defense counsel call the officer and cross-examine him and either hopefully get him to admit that that was not true, the police report, or to simply cross-examine him in a way that calls his credibility into question. And defense counsel could have done all of that at the first hearing if he had wanted to, right?
Well, he could have, by doing the state's job and raising the exception and saying, if they do rely on this exception, I want a hearing. I don't think he had that burden, but that we wouldn't be here today if he had done that. I realize that's as a fallback, and I can't, you know, excuse the fact that he probably could have saved us all a lot of trouble by doing that, but I don't think he had to. And as the Licari case says, a basis for remanding is where a legal issue has not been addressed. And the state has gotten to do that to shore up a Fourth Amendment issue in a defense appeal.
But the district court did make a finding on this issue, right? Made a finding that basically reiterated the statement in the police report that there was an odor of marijuana.
Yes, and that should have been challenged. It jumps right out at you. You can't watch the video and then read the report and wonder, he's mentoring this officer. He's talking to her about everything that's going on, and he never once in the hour plus that they're there says, I smelled marijuana. Let's go search the vehicle. That cries out. It's got to be addressed.
Please hold for a question from Judge Smith.
Yes.
Okay. My question's answered. Thank you.
And the state doesn't get a second bite at the apple in the inventory because they knew they had to put that in no matter what. And they didn't. Thank you,
Mr. Nyvold. Mr. Zettler, you have, as you know, 5 minutes of time for rebuttal.
Respondent wants a throwback to the bad old days of litigation by surprise. We don't have that anymore. There's cases back early 1900s that say that. However, the rules of criminal procedure changed all of that.
Well, he's saying that they were surprised. I think he's trying to avoid surprise himself, but please explain the difference.
There is no, the fact that there's no basis to believe that they were surprised. If you read the police reports, the officer articulated the two reasons he searched that car. So the defense didn't raise that because there was no merit to either one. The odor of marijuana allowing a full probable cause search of a car is a settled issue. They concede that. The inventory search exception is a settled issue. Therefore, the defense did not raise either of those issues. The reason the defense was okay with the record as is because it adequately presented the issue that they wanted to raise. They didn't need anything else. Now, those issues didn't win, but that doesn't mean that he didn't do a good job for his client. It doesn't mean that an appellate attorney looking at the record wouldn't have done something different, but it doesn't mean that that would have been any better either.
Mr. Zettler, can I ask you about that point about the settlement, how settled the automobile search exception is as it applies to our facts? And I'm looking at the Acevedo case, the U.S. Supreme Court in 1991, that seemed to put some parameters around the automobile search. The quote is, but because the record contained no facts supporting probable cause to believe that the contraband was hidden in other parts of the car, the officer could not search the entire car without a warrant. And my question is, how settled that as it applies to our facts when there, despite the judge's reference to a scant record, there was the reference to an odor of marijuana, I keep saying alcohol, marijuana. And so, sure enough, I believe it was in the council, it was found, I don't know if it was the pipe and some small amount of marijuana. My question is it clear that there is still probable cause for the officer, rather than stop at that point and obtain a search warrant, or perhaps get a dog if that's what they want to do, to open the trunk, and then this was the inquiry of the locked box where the rest of the marijuana is found. What's the probable cause, in other words, for the officer, based on that one statement in the report, to also search the trunk and a locked box in the trunk under that Acevedo statement?
So Minnesota case law is clear that the odor of marijuana is probable cause to search the whole vehicle. And case after case, cited in my brief at least, say exactly that. And I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last part of your question.
Well, that was my question. I'm just reading from the Acevedo case, the U.S. Supreme Court case, that seemed to suggest that not every search of every vehicle and the entire vehicle is always supported as a case-by-case analysis of the probable cause the officer has. And so I assume at times that might have to do with how strong an odor might be, how prevalent. I think I remember hearing testimony, although I never understood it fully, a burnt and unburnt marijuana smells, things like that, which would make it clear that there must be a stash in the trunk. But you believe it's clear that once that odor, no matter how faint or how scant the evidence, means the entire vehicle is open?
Yes.
For search?
I do. And if you look at appellant's briefs, page 9, State versus Jackson, the Minnesota Supreme Court has held that the smell of marijuana, without distinguishing between the smell of unburnt and burnt marijuana, is sufficient to justify the warrantless search of a vehicle under the automobile exception, as the human nose is unable to discern a criminal amount of marijuana. And if you look at my brief, I as well point out case after case after case where a, quote, faint odor of marijuana leads to the seizure of hundreds of pounds of marijuana. So a faint odor does not equal a small amount or a non-criminal amount. The final statement, and this is also in the brief, the question of the credibility of the officer not putting in or not stating on the video, squad video, that he smelled marijuana and it not being in his report. Officer Kay, or another officer on scene, does say it. And he says, when they opened the trunk, I got a big whiff of weed when you opened that trunk. That's not in the police reports either. The police reports are to refresh the officer's recollection if he ultimately has to testify. And they also form the basis for the probable cause in this case. So there's nothing fishy going on here, and there was certainly no surprise to the defendant.
Just to be clear, so the district court suppressed the items that were in the vehicle and also suppressed defendant's statement. Just to be clear, you're not challenging on appeal the suppression of his statement?
Correct.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both attorneys for your vigorous arguments. It was a good discussion, I believe. And the case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days. Counsel in the second case may approach and get ready.